Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Again to Dare to Win, the Ulu regular Thursday night radio broadcast. We're very pleased to have you join us this evening. This is where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global cooperative economic machinery that will free us and the methodology to pass this forward to future generations. Stick and stay with us. We'll be back with you shortly to get our program started. Welcome once again, and thank you so much for being with us this evening. I will be your host. I am Sister Nanana. I'm a board member with Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, and this is the Dare to Win Thursday night radio broadcast that Us Lifting Us Economic Development has every Thursday evening, where we share information that is vital to our not only survival, but our ability to thrive and to move forward in this economic environment. So to join us in our radio broadcast, we would really like to have you call in and share with us your thoughts and your comments, but by all means, to listen and be aware. The call-in number is 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and then you can press the number 1 on your keypad if you would care to make a comment or to ask a question. Those of you that are listening via your computer, you would go to our website, usliftingus.com, that's usliftingus.com, and click on the Ulu Radio link. There is a tab for Ulu Radio, and then after doing that, you will see the place to click so that you can listen to us on that particular device. So once again, we thank you for being with us, and our subject for this evening, capitalism versus democratic socialism. What's the difference and why does it matter to Black people? But before getting into that subject, we need to take a moment to pay homage and to give honor to one of those from our community who has made her transition, but has certainly been a major, major contributor to our growth and enlightenment, and that is our sister Toni Morrison. Toni Morrison made her transition on August 5th at the age of 88 years of age. She has been a Pulitzer Prize winner and a Nobel Prize winner for literature. Some of the works that she authored, I'm sure you'll recognize, such as Song of Solomon, Beloved, The Bluest Eye, Sula, and others. So we acknowledge that our elder, Toni Morrison, is now in the ancestral realm, and we certainly give honor and thanks and praise for all of the doors that she opened through enlightening us with the written word. Our guest this evening that we have with us is also an ULU board member, Brother Kimbizi, who's going to help walk us through this topic on capitalism versus democratic socialism. What's the difference and why does it matter to Black people? Brother Kimbizi, would you like to say some welcoming words to the audience? And how are you this evening?
Good evening, Sister Nanana, and I am well, thank you. It's good to be with the ULU family once again. And I thank you for reminding us of the importance of Sister Toni Morrison and paying homage to all the great work that she has done. Indeed, we stand on her shoulders and the shoulders of all of our ancestors. And so this work that we do, we recognize that this is a centuries-long struggle, and we draw from them and continue the work of building the kind of world that we once had and we will have again. So thank you.
Yes, for sure, for sure. Yes, definitely wise words that you have spoken. Thank you so much, Brother Kimbizi. So let's go ahead and get right into this topic, capitalism versus democratic socialism. What's the difference? And why does it matter to Black people, or why should it matter to Black people? Now, last week we had a very interesting subject, riveting conversation about capitalism and racism being the two sides of the same coin. And we learned that capitalism and the enslavement of African people and racism go hand in hand, that they're all part and parcel of the same plan and process. So, you know, talk to us about this subject of socialism and just share with us some basic definitions and information to get us started, if you don't mind.
Again, thank you, Sister Nanana. As a result of last week's conversation, it prompted me to want to examine the difference between capitalism and democratic socialism. Since programs that might benefit Black people, working people, and poor people are oftentimes and quickly labeled socialist or even worse, communist, and therefore not to be discussed. And I'm reminded that all of the Democratic candidates running for the presidency in 2020, with the exception of Bernie Sanders, have all expressed their allegiance to capitalism. So what is the difference between these two systems? So let's get a working definition of democratic socialism. And let's be very clear at the beginning that we are discussing European economic systems and not the systems that African peoples used for millennia before contact with Europeans. Democratic socialism is defined as a society having a socialist economy in which, and this is the key part, the means of production are socially and collectively owned or controlled alongside a democratic political system of government. In even more simple language, a society where the means of production are owned and controlled by the majority of the people. To make it still simpler, the means of production are publicly owned, not privately owned, as in capitalism. And just so we're all together, when we say the means of production, we are talking about things such as land, natural resources like coltan or oil or bauxite, diamonds. We're also talking about factories, machinery, technology, banks, insurance companies, and any wealth-creating entities. All of those collectively is what we mean when we say the means of production. This public ownership of the means of production can be done through A, voluntary cooperative businesses, or via elected governmental bodies. So there's a couple of ways that a society can get to a socialist or a democratic socialist platform where the means of production are available and accessible to the majority of the people. Some listening this evening may find this a staggering idea, but it is not new or wild. Cooperative business models exist in many places in this country and around the world, and many are very successful. For example, in the United States, 64,017 co-ops. So we see that there are about 394 worker co-ops in the country, 9,392 production co-ops, 48,649 financial services such as credit unions or savings and loans. There are 3,158 cooperatively owned utility companies. So this form of economic organization has a long history in the United States and certainly throughout the world. There are over a billion people worldwide who are involved and engaged in participating in various cooperative mechanisms. The key idea we want to convey is that under democratic socialism, the economy is publicly owned. I can't stress that enough. It is publicly owned, not privately owned. Everyone in the society has equal access to the means of production. And this is important because whoever controls the means of production controls the society. Some examples. Just for example, what if the factory workers at General Motors, you know, General Motors is getting ready to shutter several production plants. And General Motors currently is a privately owned corporation. So let's just say, what if the factory workers at General Motors were owners of General Motors? And not just workers. Would they just let the company close down their plants and lay them off? Or would they decide to retool the plant and produce state-of-the-art electric cars, save their jobs, their communities, and help the environment? You see, under this ownership mechanism, they would have some options other than just taking the pink slip and heading for the unemployment line. Another example. Medicare for All as a health plan would be even more popular in this country, except that people who have private insurance are afraid to give up their private coverage. But under Medicare for All or single payer, that's another term for the same system, the government through taxes would provide health insurance for the entire population, so there would be no need for private health insurance. Again, this is not far-fetched or utopian. Similar systems already exist in Canada, Britain, France, and other European countries. I recommend Michael Moore's very informative and entertaining documentary, Sicko, to help listeners appreciate just how inefficient American private health care is. Were it not for the propaganda of the healthcare industry, this country would long ago have adopted a single-payer or Medicare for all system. So that's the thing that we want to stress as a definition for democratic socialism and the thing that makes it different from capitalism. Under capitalism, the means of production are privately owned and controlled. Under democratic socialism, the means of production are publicly owned or collectively owned by the majority of the citizenry. Let me stop there and see if there are any questions or comments from our listeners, Sister Nanana.
Well, and if I could make a comment myself, and certainly I'll keep an eye out for listeners who may want to make a comment, please press the number one on your keypad to signal us, to let us know, to open your mic so that you can speak, to make a comment or ask a question, and we'll certainly do so. But the comment that I would make at this point, Brother Kimbizi, is that some of the data, the facts that you're providing for us are absolutely staggering. As a matter of fact, I'll ask you to go back and repeat one part of it where you actually gave us some figures in terms of the number of co-ops that already exist here in the U.S. And many of us may not even be aware that cooperative economics is in fact a viable option. So how many are operating and apparently operating successfully? Could you run that by
64,000? Yeah, there's 64,017 co-ops in the United States. And that number is made up of 394 worker co-ops, which is the fastest growing segment, by the way, it's growing very rapidly. There are 9,392 production cooperatives. There are 48,649 financial services cooperatives, such as credit unions and savings and loan organizations. And many of us are probably familiar with credit unions. We may be members of a credit union from our workplace or our churches. There are 3,158 cooperative utilities. Interestingly enough, the power company that supplies electricity to my home is a cooperative. So this is, as I said, this is not a new way of economic organization. It is not wild or radical. It is a way where people who need certain goods and services have organized themselves into voluntary associations to provide those needed goods and services at a reasonable price. And therefore, they operate these businesses. The point that I was trying to make, Sister Nanana, is that businesses are part of the means of production, and it is necessary to participate in the economic life of your nation, your country, your community, at the level of ownership. If all we are is workers, then the people who own the means of production make the decisions that have a direct effect on us, and yet and still, our voice is not included in that decision-making process. That's why I gave the reference of General Motors workers, thousands of workers. And not only are they laid off, but once that income dries up, the businesses in those communities also wind up having to close because their customers can no longer patronize them. And mm-hmm. and you wonder, how is it that a corporation can make a decision that would literally cause an entire town to die and just walk away? And the people who are left behind go from an income that allows them to be a homeowner, to send their children to college, to provide themselves decent vacations and health care. Now all of a sudden they're in a hunt for entry level pay jobs, you know, $8, $9, $10 an hour, when they were making $20 and $21 and $23 an hour. But again, mm-hmm. if you are not a controller of the means of production, then you find yourself at the mercy of those who do. And so that is why democratic socialism has a very strong appeal throughout Europe and other places. And the cooperative businesses that are operated are just one expression of that. So did I answer that part of it?
Yes, you definitely did. And thank you for the additional emphasis on the ownership portion. That for many of us, that's a whole new concept for us to wrap our minds around, that we can indeed and actually should be owners of the means of production, and to truly understand what that the means of production consist of. We're going to take a music break right now. We'll be back with you in a few minutes. So stick and stay with us, and we'll continue this discussion. Thank you.
Headlining from Arrested Development, and I come here tonight to give thanks to the rain. So brothers and sisters, please put down your umbrellas. You won't be needing those today. Look to the clouds with the most rain coming from it. For without the rain, there's no me and there's no you. I said a drip drop, drip drop, body viva, bum bum bum. Drip drop, let it rain, let God's water feed me. The water of life, mentally rinsing me. Physically drenching me, most of frowning upon your arrival, but I need you for survival. And when you fall in my community, yeah, I run outside to properly greet you. Let it rain, take my pain, I'm glad to meet you. Fill my eyes with a colorful rainbow. Every drop that hits me fills me with unimaginable and minor security. Knowing my God acknowledges me as this beach drop of rain is aimed toward me. My Lord, thanks for life. Lord, thanks for life.
Thank you,
yeah.
My rain.
It's raining revolution. It's raining solution. It's raining revolution. 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 Through the ghetto, the rain, the time I feel is mental. The goal of this rain I feel is spiritual. Saw through the eyes of the afflicted people. The eyes are hard as a million tombstones, marked with the names of the millions of kin thrown to the dust that gave them their color skin. Fades to black is the scene they're embalmed in. The rain many nights have witnessed her, receiving the sperm of a brother into a sister.
All right. Thank you so much for continuing with us on Dare to Win, where we have those sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people. Thank you for being with us this evening. This is Sister Nanana, and I am joined by Brother Kimbizi, board member of Uplifting Us. And this evening, we are talking about democratic socialism versus capitalism and what that should or should not mean for us as people of Black African descent. So, Brother Kimbizi, I'm going to ask you to get right back into leading us through this discussion. You started us out with some good foundation, definitions, and basics. And what else can you share with us this evening that would be enlightening and that we need to know?
All right, Sister Nanana. Malcolm X told us that America had hoodwinked us and bamboozled us. A perfect illustration of this, and perhaps a little painful, is that most of us in our educational journeys through elementary, middle, and high school, and even college, never heard any mention of the modes of production as a way of understanding history or historical periods. There are five general modes of production as theorized by Karl Marx. The first one being the era of hunters and gatherers that lasted thousands of years, where the basic economic activity was people hunted and gathered for their food and their sustenance. This period was followed by a period of slavery, where the bullies in the group enforced and enslaved other folks to do the work of agriculture and the things necessary to provide food, clothing, and shelter. That lasted for thousands of years and was followed by feudalism, which was a movement forward from slavery in that the masters no longer owned the slaves directly, but the slaves were tied to the land, and so whoever was the landlord took over control of the people's lives who were the serfs or the peasants on the land. Feudalism was followed by the system we now call capitalism. And we're familiar with capitalism where people who call themselves owners operate factories and other institutions and create a sense or a form of wage slavery, where the people who do the work aren't fully paid the value of their work, and the capitalists put that surplus value in their own pockets and live lives of luxury at the expense of those who work for them. Marx also postulated that the system of capitalism would be followed by the system of socialism. And this is why capitalist elites lose their minds and freak out whenever any kind or any talk of socialism comes up. These elites want to maintain the illusion that capitalism is a permanent system. It's the best ever since sliced bread and should never be replaced. Again, keep in mind that we're talking about European economic systems. But consider this. Marx is writing in 1847, and he argues that capitalism, driven by its own internal contradictions, would give rise to a succeeding system that he called socialism, communism. So when the communist revolution of October 1917 broke out and instituted communism in Russia, the capitalist elites all but lost their minds. Marx had predicted in 1847 that a revolution was coming that would overthrow capitalism. They poo-pawed him and didn't pay him a whole lot of attention, so that when the Russian Revolution went down in 1917, it scared the pants off of these capitalist elites. So what the capitalist elites then did was they proceeded to wage what was called a relentless Cold War against Russia for the next 70 years, which resulted in the collapse of the Soviet Union and the introduction of a form of state capitalism in Russia, which was ushered in part by Vladimir Putin, which helps to explain why Trump and Putin are so cozy. They are both capitalists. Meanwhile, the working people and the poor people in Russia have lost their access and control of the means of production again. The main point we want to raise for our consideration this evening is the idea that human history is a journey where human beings are learning better and better ways to organize their economic and political life. And while capitalism has amassed tremendous wealth for a small minority of the population, it has reached the point where it has now turned in on itself and is decaying, and as a result of its own internal contradictions. As a global society, we are at a critical historical moment where, as a planet, we must move beyond capitalism to a more humane social system, where the tremendous wealth of this planet can be shared and enjoyed by the 99%, and the planet can be healed. So what the point that we're trying to make in this segment is that Karl Marx predicted that capitalism would be surpassed by another system that would be superior, in that the wealth of the human family would be redistributed in a way that the majority of the people on the planet could live productive lives and flourish, and not be continued to be enslaved and exploited. And what we're seeing in America now is the desperation that the capitalist elites are going through to maintain their power. Here we are, where in just last week, 30 people were killed in these mass shootings,
mm-hmm.
and the elected leadership is incapable of acting. Why? Because the people in power have bought the politicians and they own them, so that they can't do the thing that makes sense and that would protect the population. And at the same time, we are hearing stories of global warming and how it is devastating larger and larger parts of the planet. And the largest perpetrator of global warming, the United States, has in the White House someone who even denies that global warming is a real thing. That is the irrationality of this capitalist system that now has turned in on itself and has become completely self-destructive. And so where the human family is in 2019 is, globally, we have to recognize that there are other ways of organizing our economies. There are other social systems that allow for people to live and to cooperate and share the resources of the planet and move beyond endless war and terrorism and all of the things that have people wondering, you know, where the world is headed. Let me stop there, Sister Nanana, and see if there are questions or comments.
Wow. Boy, this is really very, very eye-opening, and I judge very timely at this particular juncture for us to have this information. So, the call-in number, if you would care to join us and be a part of this discussion, 929-477-2789. Once again, 929-477-2789. And please press 1, the number 1 on your keypad, to alert us and let us know that you want to make a comment or ask a question or in some way add and be a part of this very timely discussion. You gave an example, Brother Kimbizi, of one of the things that indicates that capitalism is failing, and I would like to hear more examples if you have them. You talked about global warming. please say a little bit more about that and help draw the link between how global warming is related to the crumbling of capitalism.
Thank you for that question. We know that the burning of fossil fuels has released larger and larger amounts of carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping gases into the atmosphere. Those gases are trapping heat onto the surface of the planet and not allowing it to escape, and thereby raising the average temperature on the planet. The scientists have said that if the planet continues to warm at the rate that it is, and it goes above 2 degrees Celsius, we will find ourselves in a condition of a cascading series of events that will be too late to reverse. So that, now what is interesting is that in order to reverse that, there was a paper that came out from the UN called the IPCC, Interplanetary Climate Change Report, and they concluded that we had about 12 years to reduce the amount of carbon emissions by 50% before we hit that tipping point. Now that was 2 years ago, so that means by 2030, we would have needed to reduce carbon emissions by about 50%, and that would buy us time to hopefully avoid the catastrophic consequences of global warming. Now, the reason that we can't reduce carbon emissions by 50% is because the fossil fuel industry has a lock on the governments of not only the United States but the Western powers and just about the world. The reason that Exxon is not about to transition itself off of coal and oil is because that whole multi-billion-dollar enterprise would collapse. I saw a very interesting example of that right here in Georgia. Georgia as a state, because of its position on the planet, enjoys 10% of solar rays coming onto the planet. In other words, Georgia is 10th in the nation in terms of access to solar power. However, because Georgia Power, as the major power supplier in Georgia, because it is fossil fuel driven, mainly through coal plants and nuclear power plants, it has hindered the movement in Georgia from fossil fuel to solar power, even though we have such abundant solar power available to us, so that the state is 38th in the country in terms of its use of solar power. And the citizenry, even though we can see the effects of global warming, are divided and confused because the wealth of Georgia Power goes into the commercials. It's bombarded through movies and other messages, so that people are confused. Well, do we need to do something? And that's what I mean by this idea that capitalism, because of its internal contradictions, has turned in on itself so that we cannot even do the common sense things that our eyes tell us we have to change this behavior if we plan to be here as a species. And the last thing that I want to say on that, Sister Nanana, is this idea of, you heard me use the term internal contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where that comes from is ancient Africa. They looked at life and the planet, and they identified certain principles that seemed to operate and guide how the planet operated. And one of the principles that they discovered was this idea of polarity, that everything has its opposites inside of it. There's an up and there's a down. There's a right, there's a left. That everything is composed of opposites, and that these opposites interplay. And so as things evolve, there's this constant tug and pull among opposites, and you can't get away from it. So what is good today may not be good tomorrow. But we understand that there's this constant tug and pull of opposites, and it's that tug and pull that drives life on the planet. Where I'm going with that is simply to say that no matter how good people may think capitalism is, because of this tug and pull and this interplay of opposites, it eventually will turn into something else. It is inevitable. And that's the point that ancient Africans understood. And so they operated systems that took that into account as a way of moving life forward on the planet rather than trying to hold it still in one place, knowing that that was an impossibility. So back to the example of the fossil fuel industry, science has said this way of providing energy has reached its limit. And if you continue to use this for energy, it will destroy the planet itself.
Mm-hmm.
But because they are so greedy, rather than look for alternative means of providing power and energy, they would rather drive the planet to extinction rather than relinquish their hold, unless they can create another system that leaves them in power. So that would be the example that I would share with you, Sister Nanana.
That's an excellent example. Thank you so much, Brother Kambizi. And what that brings up for me is to do some very serious thinking about what are the basic foundational principles and guiding morals that the capitalistic system is built on. And obviously, it's clear that the basic founding principles of capitalism do not have the best interests of the people in mind. It's all about profit with no consideration in terms of who might be helped or harmed in the process of acquiring that profit and that revenue. So to me, that's a real important piece. So we're going to take another...
Well, you know, just before you go to break.
Oh, get
that's all right. Go ahead, sister. We'll come back. We'll catch you on the other side.
All right.
We'll catch you on the other side of the break.
Yes, I weigh out of our constriction. Gonna be freaking up and down the hang up alleyway with a groove I only got.
Take us up a ground.
Ha, 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 ha,
All right, we're back with you. This is Dare to Win, the regular Thursday night radio program for Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative. I'm Sister Nanana. I'm your host this evening, and we have been having just a very enlightening conversation with our guest, Brother Kimbizi, board member of Us Lifting Us, sharing with us concerning capitalism and socialism. What are the differences, and what does all of that mean for us as people of Black African descent? Should we be interested in that at all? And it is definitely an enlightening, very enlightening subject. So, Brother Kimbizi, right before we took our music break, you were about to share another comment with us.
Yes, you had mentioned the values of capitalism, and I think it's important, especially in light of the conversation we had last week about the relationship of capitalism to the transatlantic slave trade and racism. One of perhaps the first value of capitalist society is white domination, white supremacy. And in other words, at all costs, white people see themselves or insist upon maintaining hegemony over the planet. In order to do that, then obviously the very second principle that comes into play is violence. You know, they are only one-tenth of the global population. So the only way that one-tenth of the population can dominate and control the other nine-tenths of melanated people is through violence. You've got to be bloodthirsty and have no problem with just, you know, very heinous acts against other human beings. There's also this idea of materialism. There's no room for spirit in this equation. It's all about, I'm from Missouri, you got to show me. If I can't touch it, smell it, see it, feel it, hear it, it's not real. And so you get a combination of this idea of white superiority, of violence, of materialism, of competition, of greed. That's the value matrix at the heart of capitalism. And that's why the society looks the way it does in 2019. And it's tragic because that's a formula for death and killing of large numbers of people for no other reason than because of fear and ignorance. So I really want to shift gears at this point and talk about ULU as an idea whose time has come. We are building the economic mechanism, a global cooperative owned, operated, and controlled by Black people of African descent to restore balance and harmony to the planet. And what is most exciting for me, Sister Nanana, is that African people have a long history and tradition of cooperative economics. Most African societies did not endure the slavery and feudalism we found in Europe, due in large part to an African philosophy and value system that was grounded in a system that came to be expressed as Ma'at, which is truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. This philosophy and value system gave rise to economic systems that viewed land as a sacred trust from the Creator that was to be used by the people for the people, but never privately owned by any person. The planet itself was viewed as a living organism called Mother Earth that was respected and treated with love. So on just those two principles there, this idea, for example, we talked about what are the means of production, and we said the first one is land, right? Well, in capitalism, land can be privately owned. In these earlier African communities and nations and regions, the idea of private ownership of the land, what are you talking about? You know, how can any one person own land? The land is here to be used by the people. So people had access to land. They had as much land as they needed to farm and do all the things necessary to sustain life. Their children were guaranteed places to live. There wasn't a fight or a battle over who controlled the land. The land was available for the people to use. Once you change that and start putting up fences and saying, this is my land and you can't come on it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you now have set in motion a whole cascading set of events that lead to wars and hatreds and fears, et cetera, et cetera. So the point that I want to stress simply is that at the root of the best of African civilizations was this concept of Ma'at. And that's one of the guiding principles that we built into the foundation of us lifting us. So that because of Ma'at, we therefore are led to put together an economic framework that means ujamaa, familyhood, collective ownership, community ownership, so that we are creating institutions that's not owned by one person or one family, but owned collectively by the people. And so that the wealth that is generated by the people is then available to the people. So no one's hungry. The education system is available to all the children. Health care is provided to all the citizens of the community as a right, as an expression of life. And that's what we have to get to. And the good news is this is within our power to do. We don't have to beg anybody. We don't have to ask anybody. We don't have to petition anybody. All we have to do is make the decision to pool our resources and open our own business institutions that we collectively own and benefit together from them. Let me pause, Sister Nanana. You may have a question or a comment.
Well, the only comment I had was that I would like to hear more about Ulu and the plan that Ulu is proposing that will benefit all of us.
The first thing I would suggest and strongly recommend is that if you have not been to the Ulu website, you make that your first stop. Usliftingus.com, USLIFTINGUS.com. On our website, you will see our guiding principles. You will be given an overview of the plan and the model and the process of what we are doing and how we are doing it. And you will be given an opportunity to request additional information. So that the way a person gets involved with Us Lifting Us is you click on the tab Join, and you fill out that form, give us some general information on how to get in touch with you. You have to answer some general questions, one of them being, are you a person of Black African descent? Because Us Lifting Us is a cooperative that is put together for the purpose of Black African descended people. We will look at the information that you give us. We will vet you, and then we will extend an invitation for you to become a member of Us Lifting Us. You will be given our our agreement order and our values and ethics document so that you'll be fully familiar with Us Lifting Us's philosophy and operating procedures. That membership is $50 annually. And then we also ask you, as you are able and when you are able, to purchase a co-op unit, which is $1,000. I hope that doesn't cause anyone to take too deep a breath. We recognize that that is an outlay of money, but the value of what that does for you is comes back multiplied 10 times, 100 times, in that it allows you to be an owner in a business enterprise that is ongoing, that as it becomes profitable, it also makes money available to our community to provide the services that we need, and pays a quarterly dividend into your pocket, so that it's a win-win situation. It's a win for you. It's a win for your children. It's a win for our communities. It's a win for our people. And so the $50 annual membership fee, the $1,000 purchase price for a co-op unit. Now, when you and I and others put in that $1,000, that is the pool of money that we then use to operate cooperative businesses. In other words, we create situations where we can employ ourselves. We create jobs that are living wage jobs, paying well above minimum wage. And as a member of that job or that business, you have a voice and a say in how that business is operated. Very different from the work experience that many of us have gone through in capitalistic jobs. In other words, once you get on the job, you know where the clock is and you punch that. You do your work, you keep your mouth shut, you go home. ULU businesses are very different from that. You as a worker in an ULU business are actually part of the leadership team that guides the business. Let me pause there, Sister Nanana. What have I left out?
I was just thinking to myself that you have done a wonderful and a fantastic job this evening. Thank you so much, Brother Kimbizi, for exposing us to this subject and bringing it full circle so that we could plainly see that the plan that ULU has to offer is definitely a plan that will put us in the forefront of the economic environment in the future. You've talked to us about capitalism and about democratic socialism so that we can understand that we are in process of heading towards a system of economics that is definitely more geared towards everyone having full opportunity to be able to satisfy not only just their basic needs, but to live a very comfortable life. So I thank you for the information that you shared with us this evening, as well as directing us towards the ULU website, where there is a wealth of information for anyone to see and absorb that aids in understanding exactly what Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative is all about. And it's all about us having that machinery of economic self-determination, of building it, maintaining it, and then positioning things in such a way so that we can pass it to future generations. Cooperative economics, I don't think there's any doubt, there shouldn't be any doubt in anyone's mind that cooperative economics is definitely the way of the future, and ULU is leading the way. It is leading the way and is very dedicated, totally dedicated to our community, people of Black African descent. So once again, thank you so much, Brother Kimbizi, and many thanks to our listening and our participating audience. We invite you to be back with us again next week, same time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to win. where we have the sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build a global cooperative economic machinery that will pass, that will free us, and the methodology to pass this forward to future generations. Thank you, and join us again next week.